Welcome to another edition of I've Got a Beatles Podcast, an educational, informative, and irreverent look at all things Beatles. I'm David Thurmeyer, music theory professor, songwriter, and owner of a sitar.
And I'm Chris Bragg, writer, comedic actor, and Paul McCartney apologist.
We will dissect some of the most popular Beatles tracks,
as well as some of the duds,
and keep you up to date with the latest news.
So, what do you say, Dave? Let's get to Beatling.
Sounds good to me.
Our episode today is entitled "Don't Let Me Clown." So that topic is things in retrospect that John Lennon should have never agreed to do, or things he should have done but didn't do.
There's a whole lot of things you could choose from here with somebody as public and famous as John. There's plenty of things that we could choose from, and so we've got a pretty fun list for you here.
Here are some things that were not on the list, to run down a couple things.
Okay.
The Bed In for Peace, not on the list. It was great.
True.
divorcing Cynthia, not on the list.
Yeah.
Getting
caught with Yoko while Cynthia came in, bad idea.
Moving to New York City. That's not on the list. That was a good move.
It didn't work
out so well at the end.
It started out pretty well.
There are other things that could have made the list, but it didn't. Starting the list, should have not agreed to perform in the film Magical Mystery Tour. So let's say because this is Paul's dumb idea. This is right after Brian Epstein had died, right?
Yep.
And so now they're managing themselves for a little bit before they went off and got Alan Klein to manage them. Terrible idea.
Yes.
But let's say I think sometimes Paul had ideas, say, let's go to a big studio and record an album in a big movie studio.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And John was like, hey, I don't care. Let's just go along with it. But clearly thought it was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
Right? He was clearly not into Magical Mystery Tour. Clearly phoning it in the whole time.
Absolutely. Right? And yeah. And I think all the other three are pretty much phoning it in, aren't they? And they got... I'm trying to think of the scenes that each of the Beatles were in. You have, well, actually, John had a funny scene when he's shoveling the spaghetti.
That is a good scene.
The fat woman. So that was his.
That's
one,
like the only.
Yeah.
The only good scene in the movie, really.
Yeah, about one scene for him. Ringo was walking around with the fat lady because he was her. That was his aunt. So they were drinking a lot and sort of heckling each other. But pretty forgettable. And then George, I don't really remember what he did except sing Blue Jay Way.
Ugh.
Yeah. Which we already addressed in an earlier show, I believe.
So what if John had actually expressed, like, look, I think this is a dumb idea. I don't want to make another movie. Let's not do it. I'm not doing it. Right?
Yeah.
At that point, they wouldn't have made one of their big career stinkers. Well, when it showed on British TV. Of course, British TV didn't show it in color. We know that whole story. So it didn't. I mean, that movie not in color is even stupider. But it's a dud of a film.
It is.
And
it's actually
somebody
like
should have noticed it.
Yeah, and it's really the first time the Beatles flopped. First big flop. I think at that point it almost seemed like it was the beginning of the end. Things, they'd reached that point and then went downhill. And John had that power. He was half of the big songwriting team. He could have said something. You know, Paul, this is too far. But
some, too, might argue it is their only fault. Like,
yeah.
Big flop, really. Yeah. I mean, even stuff like, you know, Let It Be or whatever isn't exactly a flop. I mean, it's...
No.
I mean, everything else had some quality to it, but Magical Mystery Tour. Although, the songs for the album, obviously, are good songs. So.
Yeah, some good tunes. Which is much different than number two on our list, which we have here as Should Not Have Released the Wedding Album. And Chris has a comment about that as well. Kira, keep it in the cupboard, buddy. And if you don't know what that is, it was a great marketing idea. This was the third album that John and Yoko did together. They started with Two Virgins, then Life with the Lions, and then this was the third one. And it came in like this great package. You could get a box set of the wedding album. It had all this swag to go along with it. So you got a piece of cake, like a fake piece of cake. You had a nice booklet. You had the wedding certificate. All these little gifts. Like, so it's kind of like clever because like you were there almost. And you got some souvenirs. But the album only has two songs would be a stretch.
Should we play a little clip?
Yeah, why don't we hear... This is one of the... this is side one here. It's called John and Yoko.
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John!
Yoko!
John!
Yoko!
John!
Yoko!
Yeah, I see what they're going for there.
It's kind of a minimalist theme. Real sparse music.
Gosh, what?
Yeah.
Now, one could say the packaging you're talking about, one could say this is a visionary.
Yeah.
In that they knew that 40 years later, or whatever it is now, that we'd be so into celebrity couples. Like, what would happen if a Kardashian and whoever she's marrying that week came out with a thing you could buy that has, like, fake wedding cake and them yelling each other's names?
Pretty snazzy. So
that's... I don't know why it's on this list.
I don't know. It's like they were pretty much trailblazers, weren't they, on that?
Yeah.
Whew.
It's a real... Yeah. What... Why do you gotta... I mean, it's... Experiments.
But Chris, they were in love.
Experiments can just stay experiments, if you ask me. Here, I'm gonna do the next two in a row here.
All right.
Number three and four, they're similar. Number three, he should have performed on Saturday Night Live. There's a story that he and Paul at one point were watching... one of the early episodes of Saturday Night Live where they take the check out and they said, here's a check for the Beatles to perform on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And that they thought, and they were watching, and they thought, you know what, let's just go down there. But then they were like, can we get in the building? Could we, I don't know if we could get up there in time. And they chickened out. But how amazing would that have been for them to just show up and play a tune or to schedule a performance like one of the all-time greatest performances on Saturday Night Live was George playing with Paul Simon.
Yes. And that actually, you know, if you've seen that whole episode, which many years ago they broadcast that whole episode, and the whole thing is very funny because Paul Simon's a good actor too, but... at the beginning of the episode, Lorne Michaels meets with George Harrison, and they make fun of that whole thing about, you know, the John and Paul waving the check and all that. They make fun of it, and I think he offers George $3,000 or something, and he said that's kind of... But what was the story? It was like for each of them, or...
Yeah, I think it was $4,000 for the Beatles.
For the Beatles.
So he's like, well, $1,000. I just thought it would be $4,000. He's like, no, I thought it's obvious. If it's only one of you, then you only get $1,000. George says, I think it's pretty chintzy.
Yes, exactly right. It's very funny. So,
So that would have been cool.
Yeah.
To definitely. See him perform on Saturday Night Live. And just in general, number four, he should have performed live more than the very few times that he did. He and Yoko had one big concert in New York City. And other than that, he performed a few little protesty little events.
Yeah.
Singing Attica State on stage and things of that nature. But and I showed up to play with Elton John one time. Mm-hmm. Other than that, that's his only live works.
Yeah, his last live performance was, I think, for the Grammys in 1975. He sang Stand By Me, if I remember correctly. That was really about it. No, it would have been nice if he had performed more. He played that big famous concert in 1969 when he had hair like past his shoulders playing in Toronto. And then,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then after that he just played, like you said, with Elton John and then on the Grammys. But that was about it. And supposedly the story was that he had bad stage fright. But come on, after all those gigs with the Beatles?
You can't... I guess all those screamy girls got to him.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. Yeah.
Scared they would come back or something.
Yeah, so I agree with you. It would have been nice to have more live Lennon. Number five deals with another sidekick. We talked about Elton John when he met with Elton John and Ringo and all those guys in the mid-70s. Well, nobody was more of a Lennon sidekick than Harry Nilsson. And he was a great singer. In fact, word on the street was that the Beatles' favorite singer was Harry Nilsson. And
Harry Nilsson, if you don't know, is the person who sang the hit songs "One." Mm-hmm. "One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do," and "I Can't Live Talking. If Living Without You" is another big hit of his.
Yeah, "Without You,"
and he was popular in the 70s. He won a Grammy, I believe, for one of his albums.
And that's...
Actually won Everybody's Talking, the song from the movie Midnight Cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe won a... what is that? An Oscar.
Academy Award, yeah. That's right.
Academy Award.
And that is a great song. And yeah, the thing Chris and I both got back into Harry Nilsson by seeing the movie about him. It was a documentary called "Who Is Harry Nilsson and Why Is Everybody Talking About Him?" And it's a great movie. If you are at all interested in those songs or learning more about him, he really knew everybody and was friends with everybody and had quite a life. And
real close pals with Ringo.
Yeah, with Ringo and many other 70s famous stars. And probably the most famous album he made was infamous maybe is a better word, was with John Lennon in 1974 called Pussycats, when they were partying about every night and getting kicked out of clubs and just rabble-rousing and being crazy.
It's during John's sort of lost weekend period.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just getting there's lots of great stories in the documentary, so you should see it. But the reason this is on the list is John produced that album. I love this album, by the way. I really like it. It's my favorite Harry Nilsson album.
Pussycats.
Pussycats. John, however, producing this album, did something terrible, which is he kept making Harry sing after the point he should be singing. John, sometimes his style of singing, think "Your Blues," think like that kind of thing, is like a more of a screaming. Think anything on the first Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He likes this sort of raw screaming sound. And he was trying to get Harry, who has a very gentle, sweet voice, to be a little more like that. So the documentary argues that John ruined permanently and forever Harry Nilsson's voice by making him do this for these sessions. Which so is... that's something he just not.
It's sad if that's true. I don't know much of Harry Nilsson's later work before he died, but it, you can really hear on this album, Harry's having a hard time keeping sustaining notes and very raspy sound, kind of like George Harrison in the Dark Horse days, a little bit like that.
However, all that being said, I really like the songs on this album. There is one song that John wrote, and let's hear it. It's called Mucho Mungo / Mount Elba.
We just stopped the song at Chris's favorite part where he goes,
"But wait, what's this? Could it be Mount Elba, Mount Elba?"
Yeah.
It's a real catchy song.
It is a good
song. Good album.
Yeah, yeah.
But ruined his voice forever and his career, and then he died.
Oh, well. Sorry, Harry.
Moving on. On that note, moving on.
Number 6. Should not have had a public feud with Paul. Made him seem petty and small. Well, that's to say the least. I mean, it's good that of the Beatles, they did mend fences by the end, and before John was killed, he and Paul did get on a better footing. So that was at least a good positive thing. But man, they spent the early part of the 70s just doing all these games and sniping at each other, sending postcards and being really kind of juvenile. So
the other thing, they were both songwriters, so they one of them would write a song and put some of his feelings in the song, and not probably trying to like be extremely hurtful. Then the next person would hear that song and be like, "Yeah, that's about me," and then he'd write his song super extra hurtful. And then there was a little bit of a back and forth with that.
Mm-hmm.
There was trying to think of a Paul song that made some references to John.
There were a couple on Ram that supposedly did, like Too Many People and
Dear Boy.
Yeah, Dear Boy. Yeah. It was another one. Three Legs.
Bet You Never Knew, Dear Boy, What You Had Found.
Yeah, that kind exactly. Supposedly the song Three Legs, because, you know, the Beatles were four legs. My dog, he got three legs, but your dog, he got one. I don't know. I didn't really get it. You really have to be looking for something.
Yeah, so maybe John was like real sensitive because back and forth. And looking for something, and then heard those songs. So he wrote a extremely scathing song.
Anything but subtle.
Anything but subtle. And I'm not going to repeat what is said in the movie Imagine, But there's a him and George recording this in Imagine, and they're playing it, and the track or it gets cut off. He says some extra nasty stuff, and that's sort of like fit a sort of like anger.
Yeah.
During that, this song called "How Do You Sleep."
Got a real stinging guitar from George playing slide and real nasty sound.
That's right.
With lots of lyrics. You don't have to be a diehard like us to catch some of the references. For example, "The only thing you done was yesterday." That's a good
one. And now
letter.
You something, what is it? Now you.
And since you've gone, you're just another day.
Yeah. Yeah, making reference to his song "Another Day."
Right, or a pretty face may last a year or two. I don't know.
Who's he talking about?
Who's he talking about? Talking about Ringo? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, he hated Ringo. No.
Yeah. So just nasty.
Here's number 7 on the list. Those top 6, by the way, those were all my choices. These now we're getting into your.
Yes.
You're part of the list here. Number 7, "Should Have Spent More Time with Julian Through the Years." He wasn't much of a father, was he? He was kind of a... I mean, he was busy.
Yeah.
You know,
he had a
getting
few
chased
things
around
going
by
on.
The skirts. But, and making, you know, great, great albums and touring around. But
yeah,
was not much of a dad, I think. In his later years, sort of mended some fences, at least with Julian. But yeah, he should have. You know, it would have been nice for him to be a little bit better father the first time around.
Yeah, and like you said, by the time Sean came around, he was much more of a father and really devoted his life 5 years to raising Sean. So. Yeah, I guess at least he learned from his mistakes, but I always felt sorry for Julian a little bit. He really had to come out from the shadows here and make something of himself, and he actually did have a period in the 80s with some big hits, and you and I remember him well.
Yeah, here's one now.
Yeah, this was his big hit. He had two big hits off the album Velot, which, as I've said before to Chris, I have on LP. And is, you know, it actually got a lot of use. I'm not too proud to say that. But the I did like the album. But this song was one of the big hits. This was "Too Late for Goodbyes" from 1984.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm looking at that video, and it's uncanny how much Julian looks like his father.
That was Julian's first album. He released many more. I'm sure you could not name two of them.
He did? Me.
Yes. In fact, we're going to have a future episode where we talk about releases from Julian and Sean and Donnie Harrison and all of the kids of Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Julian's latest album was just released in October.
Really?
It's called Everything Changes.
Oh.
So I released 3 October 2011.
Well, I know you're going to put that on your wish list.
Yeah, what a great stocking stuffer that would make, right?
It would be.
Everything Changes.
All right, good to know. Well, next on our list, we have, going back to the protesty songs here that were mentioned, we talked about his live albums, or not live, we talked about his live performances where he did the New York City songs that were kind of protesty. Number 8 on the list is, he shouldn't have made the album sometime in New York City. It was really...
dreadful?
Know, yeah, dreadful. It was supposed to be, you know, he'd moved to New York City, he was joining the radical movement and protesting and trying to be, you know, involved in the counterculture, which was great. We have no problem with that, but unfortunately the timing wasn't so good because he was trying to become a citizen and that didn't really help the situation much with the government. And not to mention, there are a lot of lousy tunes on there.
Let's hear a lot. It was hard for us. We discussed which is the lousiest tune on this album. What song should we hear?
Well, I think you were hankering for either Attica State or Angela.
Oh, how about some sweet, sweet Angela?
All right, let's hear. This is about the Angela Davis, who was a politician, I believe, and she was put in
African American woman.
African American, yeah. And so here's a little bit of Angela from John Yoko and Elephant's Memory Band. So that was Angela from Sometime in New York City by John and Yoko and Elephant's Memory Band. Well,
I unfortunately, elephants have a memory and they never forget. Because I would like to forget all the songs of that album.
But, you know, it did have that album, not only apart from the wonderful songs like that you just heard, it had a bonus record. And
oh,
yeah. And it had a live performance of John Yoko and Frank Zappa with the Mothers of Invention. There's a big scandal that went along with that, which we won't get into now. But if you're interested, you'd think, cool, Zappa, John and Yoko, pretty awesome. But turned out there was a lot of friction between the trio. So you can take a look at that. But I don't really listen to the bonus tracks. And actually, I don't really listen to the album at all. Apart from that. So, yeah.
Yeah, actually, when you mentioned Angela to me, I was like, which one's
that? Yeah, you didn't remember that one.
Because I think I listened to this album maybe once.
Yeah.
And thought, ugh.
Yeah. I think the word doggerel comes to mind.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So, anyway.
Number 9 on the list of things John should have done. should have made up with George at the end of his life. Apparently, he and George were having a little bit of friction for not giving him credit on a few Beatles-era lyrics.
Yeah.
Do you know which lyrics he was complaining about?
Well, I remember reading about the Playboy interviews, which were done with John Yoko right before he died, and the interviewer asked about George. He said, "How come you haven't really talked much about George?" And John mentioned that he felt slighted because there were a couple of lyrics that he gave him, and I think he mentioned might have been Taxman or something. Real famous songs that John apparently helped with and didn't get credit for. And so they were a little bit bitter toward the end. And then also he made a reference to George saying, with the plagiarism of My Sweet Lord, he said, "Oh, come on, George could have just changed a note or two. He knows better."
Yeah. So, it's unfortunate. They get into that at this recording, I have actually watched both parts of the George Harrison documentary. They don't get too into how they were at the time for each other, but they get into George's reaction to John getting killed a little bit. So that's an interesting bit.
Yeah, and I think George made up for it eventually by doing All Those Years Ago as a good tribute. The next one on our list is number 10. And I said here that John probably should have laid off the heroin during the Let It Be sessions. If you've ever seen Let It Be, if he's not with Yoko all the time, which is almost all the time, he looks pretty doped out in the movies, kind of staring a lot and fiddling with his guitar and not doing much. And he could hardly write a song. Think about are there great tunes on Let It Be from Lennon? Let's see, we've got Dig a Pony.
No.
Across the Universe is a good song, but it's older.
No thanks.
Not much. Maggie Dig May. It? Dig It? Yeah, Dig It.
Nope.
Pretty weak. And yeah. We're going to play
phoning
a little...
Phoning it in, one could say he was.
What was that?
Probably because phoning it in.
He was phoning it in. He was. Indeed.
Let's hear a little clip from the film. Of course, this is double, triple bootlegged from the Blu-ray, version of... Do you think Let It Be will ever get released, if the film will ever get released on proper video?
There was I get this podcast, not to plug a fellow podcast, but this one's the Beatles Minute. And the guy mentioned that that supposedly there are talks in the works here about getting Let It Be released one of these years. So it would be nice. I think they said that there have been a lot of reasons why it hasn't come out. But one main reason was that Paul and Ringo looked at it and felt like, oh, it's too depressing. It's too hard to go through this and watch it all again. Which, eh.
Maybe here's what you do then. Fellas, release it, but in a form where there's a new sort of documentary film with you two talking about the sessions and having a reframing it in sort of a more positive light or something, or even doing a track of director commentary.
Yeah.
Underneath the film, that would be great. It is kind of a dreadful thing to have to sit through.
Yeah.
Because it's so listless. And then at the end, it gets a little like, oh, let's go do a concert on the roof. Mm-hmm. And it suddenly comes to life a little bit. But
yeah, the first 45 minutes are rough watching.
Yeah. Let's hear a little clip from the, to show you what we're talking about the noodling. meandering noodling that was going on consistently throughout the mornings as they were recording.
Right.
The story being they would get up, they would have to be, because of, they'd have to be on, like, actual work hours with this if any musician who wants to get up at 6 a.m. and go to a cold studio and have to wear a coat while you're performing. Yeah. Anybody. So that puts him in the state of mind of this clip.
Here's Across the Universe from the movie Let It Be. From a great book about the Let It Be sessions. It's called Get Back, The Unauthorized Chronicle of the Beatles' Let It Be Disaster. And talking about that particular recording, it says, John leads the band, this was from January 7th, 1969. John leads the band through another complete run-through. Unfortunately, this one is entirely devoid of feeling. Once again, Paul sings along, and the song almost breaks down as he forgets to shorten one of the choruses as John moves on to the verse already. They can't work up enthusiasm to play the song, so they move on to something else.
There's a lot of examples. I wondered while watching Let It Be, there's a lot of examples of there'd be a guy singing, and then somebody sort of half joins in for some backup vocals, but it almost sounds like they're intentionally trying to screw up the song.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is my way of being petty about how much I don't like your song.
Yeah.
Is like really like a good example. Diggit. John's trying to sing something with Diggit, mm-hmm. and Paul's just there with like, dig it up, dig it up, dig it up. Like really being like, it's like, is he trying to, I mean, I didn't know if it was their that's their process where they, you know, they try out some different background vocals until they find the right one, or if in those sessions they were in such a bad state that they were just kind of like jabbing each other with, like, here's some shitty background vocals to really mess up your song. Enjoy.
Well, exactly. And I think at the end of that one, the Across the Universe, I think it's after the writer said it broke down, I think John just says, well, has anybody got a fast one? I mean, they were just like... just like, after
like Paul, I'm about to fall asleep to this.
Listless. And Paul was trying to sing along and... sing like some goofy background vocal that didn't work harmonizing and ugh.
So the last two on our list, we'll read them together, I guess.
Yeah, sounds good. Number 11, it should have gotten a second opinion on recording all those Yoko solo albums. And we can hear Phil Spector or whoever else was recording saying, "Really, John? Do you think she sounds that good?"
And number 12, this sort of goes along with it, is just also shouldn't have released the aforementioned two versions at Life with the Lions.
Yeah.
So let's hear a little bit of Yoko solo, because I love it so much.
Yeah, this comes from the John Lennon Plastic Ono Band album.
Yeah. And then classic album,
always voted one of the greatest rock albums of all time. But then you have the lesser known companion album, which is
album to that album.
Yeah,
great,
yeah,
I want it.
Great, get this. It's called Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band. The only neat thing about it, I'll say, is that it has the same band on it. So you've got Ringo playing drums, Klaus Voormann on bass and John on guitar. So
that's pretty cool. But doesn't it have, it's a very, very, very similar album cover too.
Yes, the only difference is that John is in Yoko's lap on one and then Yoko's in John's lap on the other.
That's pretty neat.
Pretty neat, yeah.
Well, it must be great. It must be a great album. Let's hear some of it.
Let's hear a little bit of the song, Why. Okay, we hope you're still listening to us here after that.
Everybody just turned the damn thing off. They're like, nope. Why? They don't, you know, nobody knows how to fast forward podcasts anyway.
No.
I have no idea. But, jeez.
Woo!
Woo! Wait. That's a dud. That's dud riff. Why is the right question?
Yes.
There is no answer.
Which is, you know, actually that song has a cool groove to it. If you listen to the bass, Klaus is playing a pretty funky riff, and John's doing...
He's great. Klaus Voormann, oh brother, he's great.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Klaus, you see a lot of Klaus in the George documentary, too. A lot of Klaus talking very German.
Yes, very German. So, yeah, Klaus rocks out on that tune, but... and Ringo's pretty good bashing away, and John's doing feedback and doing fun stuff on his guitar, so sounds good. And then Yoko comes in.
Kind of screws everything up, I would argue.
Yeah, it sort of does.
With their shrill screaming. I will say this. There are some later Yoko works. Particularly, there's a song called Toy Boat from a few years ago. Which is really kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And the stripped down John and Yoko, Double Fantasy stripped down with John and Yoko. There's a great version of a couple songs on there that she has vocals on. And there's one of that they sort of do a duet.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds fantastic.
Is that Every Man Has a Woman Who Loves Him?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have not heard that, definitely that will give you a different take on Yoko, on that she had some abilities.
Yeah.
And that maybe they were just really starting to tap them in 1980, you know, and then,
yeah.
Maybe not so much time on the Yoko solo stuff.
No, the one really good song that Yoko did was the last song that John Lennon played on, which is Walking on Thin Ice. The last song that was what they were working on the night John was killed.
So that's our Don't Let Me Clown list.
That's a great title.
Incompletion.
So
we'll see ya.
And we'll catch you next time.